Last week we looked at the second message in the series on anxiety. We talked about not worrying over the basic needs that we have: food, water, clothing. Those things will be met by God. We have a promise. He gave us the birds of the air, and he gave us the lilies of the fields. And we also learned that we're to trust God to provide, that we don't worry about these things, but we simply trust him. And I think the whole Christian life, the entire Christian life, is about trust. If we don't trust God, then we don't really have anything to base a foundation for our lives on. And then we talked about, instead of worry, how about just focusing on the kingdom and his righteousness, and all of these things will be added unto us. So today now, I want to kind of shift gears a little bit, and I want to talk about trials and circumstances, because all of us will face them at some point in our lives, every one of us. None of us gets a bye on this. In fact, I think they come daily, and I think that we need, this is going to be a great message, at least for those who are going through hardships, and even right now in this moment when we're talking. But James gives us a very familiar text, and I think verse 5 in particular is butchered a lot of times because it's taken out of context, and we'll kind of walk through this today. But anyway, let's look at what James tells us. First of all, face trials with joy. Oh boy. That's a real tough one right up front, but James says it very clearly. Notice verse 2. Count it all joy, my brothers. Now, my brothers is an affectionate term. It's an inclusive term. So what he's saying is that he is a sojourner with us, that we're in this together. These are things that we have in common as believers. When he says my brothers, it's an affectionate term, and it refers to the community of believers, that we all will experience this. He starts out by saying count. And this, he's not like 1, 2, 3, 4, but count refers to the way we view things, how we look at things. Sometimes we get out of focus. Sometimes we look up here and we're not really focused on where we need to be. In other words, James is getting ready to ask us to change the lens of how we look at trials and hardships and all of those things that come against us. Instead of looking at the trial and going, oh no, a tough situation, he wants us to change how we view it. So he says, count it all, or complete is the Greek word there, joy or gladness. We all do it. And I've said this already, I'm the king of this at times. When a trial comes upon us, the knee-jerk reaction is what? I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to go through it. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to experience it. And James is getting ready to tell us to change how we view that trial. And they are difficult. I like what Kurt Richardson says in his commentary. James encouraged them to embrace their trials, not for what they are, but for what God could accomplish through them. And as we go through this, we're going to see what James is driving at. But initially, what we can do is we can look and start thinking, maybe there's something more to trials than what I'm picking up on. It's not that, and you're going to get them. If you seek to live for Jesus Christ in this world alone, you're going to encounter trials because of your faith. But then there are daily trials that will come against us. And so we're either going to pass the test or we're going to flunk the test. And I would maintain that sometimes when we flunk the test, God allows the same trial again. And maybe even a time after that and a time after that until we pass that trial. And anyway, now we look at the reality. Face trials with joy. That's a tough thing to do. I don't know if it means so much you have to be particularly overjoyed about, oh, gee, the trial has come upon me, this is great, but how we view, see, there's a subtle shift there. If we view it from this angle, and we talk here about the reality, when you meet trials of various kinds, Now, this word various kinds, one word in the Greek means multicolored, multifaceted. In other words, trials can come at us from all different angles. They may not take the same shape. They may not take the same bite or feel to them. But all trials have this multicolored approach, a vast network of trials that will come against us. Let me just remind us of something. And I think it's important that we remember this. Nothing can come against you that God has not allowed. I want you to hear that again. Nothing can come against you that God has not allowed. In other words, if God doesn't want a certain thing to come against you, he'll cut it off. But when these trials do come, you can be sure of this fact that God is going to use these trials. What Satan means for bad, God will flip for good. I'm telling you, it's right here. When you meet trials, this word meet is very funny. This is literally what it means. To fall into something. So as you are walking and you are living your Christian life, all of a sudden, there's a trial that you fall into. That's literally the meaning, is you're falling into something. And isn't it true in your own life that when you are going through a trial, doesn't it feel like you are stuck in a hole? And you just want to try to get out and crawl out? These potholes and these ditches will come up in our life constantly. Most of us try to do this. We try to walk around them. We try to do everything to avoid them. I do with my car because I have tires. And those. One time I thought telling the state that you owe me a set of front tires because one of your potholes destroyed my tire. But you can't do that in the Christian life. The word trials. Here's where James starts really digging in a little bit, all pun intended. The word trials means to learn the nature or character of something. In particular, it means this. It means test. Oh, I think I'm starting to get this, Pastor, because what you're saying is instead of looking at the trial, now I got to look at why this trial has been allowed and why it has come. So I'm not to look at this thing negatively, even though it is affecting me negatively. Because what James is saying here is this is a test. That when these trials come, it is for a purpose that God allows. It is an ordained purpose that we are encountering whatever trial it is. Maybe it's a trial at work. Maybe it's a physical trial. Maybe it's a spiritual trial. And there's so many different varieties of trials that come into our lives that they become multicolored, multifaceted. And he's telling us here that these things are tests. I wrote this down and I put a heart on it. And I always do that when I want to hit the heart. When trials, hardships, and pain come, we are to look differently at it. Change the question. Not why me, but what does God want to develop in me? Those are two different questions. One is, why are you picking on me? The other one is saying, okay, God, because this has come against me, and because I know that when trials come, I know that you would not allow this trial to come against me. And if God is allowing that trial to come against me, then there has to be something that God wants to work in my life and your life. It's a shift. It is a shift. It is a mind shift. It is a heart shift that these trials are coming against us. Now, the big question I had this week, and it answered it with the question four, is for they produce endurance. So we have these trials that are coming against us. And notice James writes in verse 3, "For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness." That's a handful in the Greek language. "For you know" means to experience something have knowledge of something based on experience. Here's the thing. As you grow in your Christian life, and as you experience these trials that come against you, and if you are growing in your Christian faith, you will start looking at trials from that angle. And so you have learned to experience, because you know that this is really not about God messing with me. This is about God trying to do something in line with testing your faith. God is in the business, Jesus Christ is in the business of growing our faith, not our portfolios. God is in the business of this initial faith when we trusted in Jesus Christ. That is not supposed to stay infant. That is supposed to grow and grow and grow. And when I listen to people and I hear mature Christians, I hear things that are deep and rooted in trust and faith and reliance. And yet when I see an infant, which there's nothing wrong with being an infant in Christ. That is, when you first come to Jesus Christ by faith. I don't have a problem with that because I was an infant. And you should have heard me when Audrey and I were dating in her Sunday school class, the ridiculous questions that I was asking. Thankfully, I had a very mature Sunday school teacher that put up with me. But here's where the problem enters into the picture. When we handle trials just like the world handles trials, and there is no growth in our faith, and we are, John 3:16, the rest of our Christian walk, and we scuffle about and we fight and we argue and we get mad at God and we do all of these things, but the mature believer through experience knows, aha, this is a faith test. This is a faith test. The word testing means, again, he refers back to verse 2. He says to learn the true nature of something, how or what God is doing in my life. I want you to get this image in your mind. How is God, and that's why I'm over here so you can see it fully. How is God using the trial to fit me together into the image of Christ? Now, see, we've already taken a huge leap. We've gone from viewing trials as to a different level and a different way of viewing them. We've made the shift from, I don't want to do this, and sometimes you may actually not want to do it, and I understand it, and I get it. And there's been times I don't want to do it either, but when you start growing in your Christian walk, you change the lens and you go, okay, how is God fitting this together to make me look more like Jesus? You do realize that the day that you trusted in Jesus Christ, his whole purpose for giving us the presence and the power of the Holy Spirit was to conform us into the image of who? Jesus. And how does he do this? He does it through trials. This is something else too. Do you know that there was the trial of the cross, the pain and the suffering that Jesus went through? Well, we can identify with Jesus Christ when we go through these trials. It literally means that we become and understand the power and the significance of what Jesus did for us, but then we can also experience it here, but with the added benefit of knowing that he's growing our faith. The Greek word pistos or pistis means complete trust or reliance on God. So the reason that we face trials of many kinds and multicolored, multifaceted, is the testing of our faith. This is what it's about. You remember how you trust God? You just trust. There's going to be a theme in this series, and it focuses on the word trust. You trust God to meet your basic needs. Trust God in your trials and your storms. That's the deal. You have to trust God at all times, which is reliance on God. And then he uses the word steadfastness, or to bear up under difficult circumstances, literally endurance. I don't know if you men and women have ever ran a marathon. That's what I like to compare the Christian life to, a marathon race. This is not a sprint. This is a marathon. And we run the marathon, sometimes potholes right in front of us that we fall into. And the one time that I was, I guess you could say it this way, dumb enough to run a marathon, I realized that in that 25 miles that I ran, there were a lot of different obstacles. Sometimes I had to go around somebody that stumbled. Sometimes my legs were saying, please stop, you're killing me. You know, and I wanted to quit, and I just kept running because there was, you know, a bunch of us running in this marathon together. But there are a lot of different things. Sometimes my stomach was hurting. Sometimes my back would hurt. I mean, it was rough. But this is what the Christian life is. If you took on Jesus Christ simply to be cool or in vogue or whatever, you took on Jesus Christ for the wrong reason. The goal in the Christian life is to become like Christ, and the only way to become like Christ is to endure like Christ. And so here you have this race, and it's not a sprint. We're not talking a sprint. We're talking a marathon. He wants us to have endurance, to hold up under the pressure and the weight of life. Question for all of us, how are you doing? Have I already changed your mind about how you'll look at trials tomorrow morning when you wake up or this afternoon? Because any measure of a good sermon is changing people's minds, changing the way that they view things. The purpose of this is maturity. Notice what he says. And let steadfastness have its full effect. That is the intended result. Don't try to figure a way out of the circumstance, but let the trial produce what God intends to produce in your life. How many of you recently, you don't need to raise your hand, but how many of you recently have been in a trial and you say, okay, how can I get out of this? How can I sidestep it? Here's the thing, and this has been true in my life. Maybe it's been true in your life. Whenever I've been able to wiggle out of it, you know what happens to me? Inevitably, the same trial comes again. That's because God's saying, okay, you got out of that one. You wiggled your way out of it. But now I'm gonna put this back in your path so that you have to deal with it again. I think that could very well be the case a lot of times. Because if we're not complete and we're not pieced together and looking and growing in maturity, and God knows that there's a weakness in your life, he's going to expose it. You do realize that. God will expose that weakness as many times as necessary for you to go, I get it. I get it. He's wanting to change this area of my life. And it could be anything. I don't know what God's doing in your life. I don't know what he's doing in your heart. But I do know that God is a God of repetition. And sometimes we have to learn a lesson 2, 3, 4 times before we have that one brilliant moment where we go, aha! Now I know why this thing keeps coming around. It's because I've been viewing it like, Help me out of here, Sunday school teacher. Help me out of here, pastor. Get me. I don't want to touch that thing. But then God says, okay, you don't want to touch it here, but you're back in it. And the purpose of that, I like how James writes, that you may be, what's it say? Perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Purpose, perfect means complete. Complete means the emphasis on the entire whole. That is how God is fitting things together. And lacking nothing, so that you will not, that you'll have everything that you need. There seems to be a pattern here for James, and I think it's a biblical pattern. Watch this. Oh, wait a minute. First, I want to give you a quote that I said, don't try to figure out of the way, out of circumstance, but let the trial produce what God intends to produce in your life. Think of a trial that you're facing right now. Don't seek to get out of it. Let it have its perfect, and it may hurt. Ugh. It may be rough. You know, I have recently become scared of my dentist. Seriously. I'm going to start doing sleep dentistry. It just drives me nuts. That you can probably get out of. But other stuff that comes along, you can't get out of. I get that. Don't try to figure a way out of it. This is the shift that I want you to make. You see how I wrote this? Don't try to figure a way out of it. This is what I want you to do. Try to figure what God's trying to do through it. Change your perspective. James is wanting us to change lens. Change our perspective. This is a good biblical way of looking at this. Trials, testing, endurance with the ultimate goal of maturity. When a trial comes in your life and you see the hole and you're in the hole, don't go, please get me out of here. Just stay in there. Let God do what he's supposed to do. You do know eventually God will get you out of the hole. Particularly when God's looking, and by the way, God's not left me TV and gone to the refrigerator to get a snack and left you hanging. He knows very well the trial that you're in, and he says, you know what, and he may say it to me, Mike needs to learn this area. He needs to grow in this area. Okay, there's a hole. Now let's see, oh, he's crawling out of it. We're going to do it again over here. And I keep doing it until I learn it. And the big question here is, what if you are lacking something? You notice he says here, but you won't lack, so that you'll lack nothing. So you're in this, you're really not handling the trial joyfully. And you're not really seeing how God is fitting this together in your life. And you're struggling to understand it. This is what you need to do. You need to seek God's wisdom on the issue. If any one of you lacks wisdom, that is wisdom dealing with the trial, let him ask God. This is a huge revelation I'm going to give you. Not really. It's simple. Let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given. The word wisdom here kind of has its root in the Old Testament as well. It means the capacity to understand what is going on. This is not divorced from the text that I just read. This is incorporated. So when these trials come, we're looking at this going, okay, God, I need wisdom to know what is happening. When was the last time you went to God and asked him for wisdom to look at your trial from a different language, a different way, and say, okay, God, what does this mean for my life? That's a complete change from what we normally do. I don't want this. Change. Look, I don't understand it, God. I don't know what you're doing here. Oh, well, James says go to God. Ask him. By the way, this is the best way to solve the lack of wisdom. Prayer. I'm not sure. I had a friend this week on Facebook. I loved what he said. And I commented back to him. He said, I just had a wonderful conversation with God. You do realize that's what prayer is, right? It's just conversation with God. It is just talking to him and saying, God, you know, Lord, this trial is hurting. I need, first of all, you to give me joy in the trial. But part of the joy issue is not, oh boy, another trial. No, part of the joy issue is that you know God is doing something in the trial. that you know he is at work in the trial, and you go, good, wow, God's going to do something in my life. What is it? I don't know. And Lord, I don't know how to deal with this trial. Can you give me the wisdom on how I can deal with it and how I can look at it? And Lord, maybe I need to change the way I look at this thing. He says here, the best way is just simply go to God. Ask God. The other thing that I want to say here is this word reproach. And you notice what he says here? If any lacks wisdom on how to handle a trial or what to look for or what God's trying to do, let him ask God, who gives generously to all. Generously means lavishly. Without reproach. Do you know what the word reproach means? It means to find blame. God does not blame us if we don't know what the trial is. Or what he doesn't fault us for that. We're human. Where God would fault us or could find fault is if we don't ask him. If I go to God and say, God, I don't understand this thing. It is messing with me, and I don't understand the purpose for this. God's going to say, yeah, I can see that. But I'm going to give you what you need. I'm going to give you wisdom. But if I'm over here going, I don't understand this trial. God, I don't like it. I don't want to do this. I don't like this. This is bad. I don't want to go through this. Then God could say, why aren't you asking me? Have you ever thought about asking God about the trial that you're in, the hardship, the struggle, the pain? Why don't you just go to God? God can show you what it is. Most of the time, we do not do that. Let's just be real. Most of the time, the average Christian person will try their best to get out of it. And you're looking at the king of denial. But very rarely, and all those who are mature, those who have really reached a point, a level of maturity, they go, I know what God's doing here. As when you're younger in the faith and you're not as experienced with God and the way he works, I want you to understand something. God loves you. You are his child. Do you think God is really messing with you? Do you think he's just picking on you? Mm-mm. No, that's not my God. My God is the God who redeemed you and me and paid for our sin on the cross, went to great lengths to redeem us. Why would then God turn around and harass us? Now, I tell you, somebody that will harass you, you know who he is, right? It's Satan. Satan will harass you, but I'm going to tell you this too. Satan can't do anything to you that God does not allow. Go back and read Job. God allowed it. A lot of times in the Bible, I mean, God just allows stuff. But there's a purpose. There's always, God has, I don't know how he does it. I mean, honestly, he's got millions of Christians, and he has this whole thing. That's what makes him God. Two things I've learned in all my theological studies: there's a God and I'm not him. And I would flunk miserably. I can't even keep track of myself. Can you imagine me keeping track of 1,000,005 people? Mind-boggling. The source of this wisdom is God. The target is our faith. Again, James brings it back to faith. Now, this is how not to. How not to. But let him ask in faith. The Greek word pistis, complete trust. Trust in what? Trust that God will give you an answer. A lot of times we don't go to God because we don't think God will give us an answer, or because we think our relationship's too far away from him that he won't speak to us. Have you ever tried? I'm going to tell you guys, gals, God will tell you exactly why you are going through what you are going through. at some point in that process, before you get to crawl out of that hole and God puts you back up on solid ground, he will tell you why you're going through this. But you cannot do this with doubting. For the one who doubts is like the wave of a sea that is driven and tossed by the wind. So when you go to God, don't go with one eye open. I don't really trust you. But Lord, could you tell me why this is? But I'm really looking for an answer over here. I'm trying to figure this thing out myself. But I'll take any advice that you can give me, God. I'll take anything that you want to throw my way. But I'm not really relying on that. This is who James is talking about. And when your faith is like that, here's the image that James gives us. That is your faith. That's rough. And I don't care how, I'd never surf in that thing. I know there's surfers that would, but I wouldn't. This is a picture of what your faith looks like when you hit trials and you don't go to God and you don't ask for faith. Do you know what God wants to do? This is what he wants to do. He wants to calm the storm in your heart. You see those two pictures? One, and one's just calm. I've met Christians, and when I was a younger pastor, it used to irritate me. I said, don't you ever get rattled by anything? I mean, doesn't anything knock you off or throw you off for a loop? And they're just as happy as they can be, knowing that they've got a trial that they're going through, and just as calm as can be. Calm like this, and I'm back over here, freaking out. And this person's just calm, just calm. Do you know what the difference is between those two people? One is trusting God, and the other is not. That's the difference. All of us, myself included, all of us should be seeking for this type of faith in the midst of storms and trials. James goes on to say, verses 7 and 8, for that person, let me go back, the person that lives like this, that does not trust God, that does not ask God, that does not talk to God, that person, that person must not suppose that he would receive anything from the Lord. Look at it this way. If you're not trusting God, you're not trusting God to give you what you need to understand the trial, why should God trust you with the information? God says, you're just going to throw it off anyway. You're going to try to do things yourself. You're going to try to figure this. You're going to try to get out of it. Why should I trust you with the information if you're not going to trust me? And you remember, God won't find fault with somebody that says, Lord, I need help. I don't know what's going on. Please help me. God will do it. But you have to believe that God will give you the answer, or at least sustaining power until he gives you the answer. But if you don't, then you're like this. The wind driven, you know, the sea driven by the wind, and your ship is rocking and your world is rocking. And you know what happens when that happens? You lose sleep, you get anxiety, you get frustrated, you get mad, you start saying things you don't normally say. All of these bad things come from that. You try to figure things out, you run through. Oh, man, I'm going to say 15, 20 years ago, I was trying to figure every which way I could do this and do that. And, you know, that's exhausting. It takes more work to do that than it just says, just to go and say, God, help, and I'm going to trust you to get me the answer. He is a double-minded man or woman, unstable in all his or her ways. This is crazy. That is not stable, and I would not be under there. But this is sometimes a picture of what it looks like. An unstable situation is what the person looks like when they're not trusting God. There ain't no way. I know it's been like that. This is the land of the gods, or an area where, in a part. But no, I'm sorry, I wouldn't do that. And the goal is that we don't live our Christian life. By the way, it's the Garden of the Gods. You can look it up. The word unstable, beyond this, it means this. Listen to this. This is fascinating. The word unstable means being unable to be controlled by someone. So the person who is unstable is not controlled by God, but is really controlled by their circumstance or their situation. You're not controlled by God. And this is a good picture of something that's unstable, that's not being controlled by God. And that's not what we want to do. That's not how we want to live our Christian life. Let me say three things quickly in closing. Don't view trials as negative. Reverse your lens. When trials come into your life, start looking at them positively. What does God want to do? Secondly, find out what God is trying to do in your life. Change the question. Not why me, but God, what are you doing? Not to me, but God, what are you doing? What do you want to show me in my life? And if you're unsure, you're not really sure how to respond or how to deal with the trial, then you just say, God, your word says that if I go to you and ask what this is all about, that you'll tell me. I honestly believe if we get to that place in our lives when trials start mounting, and they will, and we see more and more holes that we're falling into, trials that we're falling into, and we sit there and we go, you know what, this is temp. This is a temp trial. There's an old saying, I think it's true, this too shall pass. So when you're in that trial, just go, okay, God, I know it's dark here. I don't like this, but Lord, show me what you are trying to do. God will show you. And when you go, okay, and it has to be okay. But the positive end here is that God is making you more into Christ and less like the world. Because this is how the world handles trials. They go to trial. They sue, they fight, they kick, they slander, they abuse. That's how they handle it. And if you've done something wrong and a trial's on you, by golly, I got a lawyer for that. We don't do that. We simply trust God. We don't want this to ever be said of us, blown by the wind. And I guarantee you, all of us in this room at some point have been blown like the wind. Every one of us, myself included. Like I said, king. So I needed this more than you guys did, and gals. If you have a trial today, this is what I want you to do. I want you to come up here, and I want you to drop it off at the altar. Just say, okay, God, you take this trial. And while you're up here, I want you to pray that God will give you wisdom in the trial. God, and there's nothing wrong with praying to God and saying, God, I need strength to get through this. This is tough. I'm not trying to belittle the trial or say it shouldn't hurt. I'm not trying to say any of that. I know it hurts, and I know it's painful, and I know trials can be rough. I'm not denying that. Only a fool would do that. But where it is foolish is we continue to let that trial control us. Again, trials hurt. Every one of us, Lottie Dottie and everybody in this room could tell you trials hurt. I get it. But trials should not dictate who we are in Jesus. And I just want to leave you with this encouraging word that whatever trial you're in today, and I know there's trials here today. There is. I want you just to realize that this is what God is doing. Everything in his plan for us. Oh, he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion until the day of Christ. Part of the good work is hard work and tough times. If this were easy, the entire world would be a Christian. If you accepted Jesus Christ, he gave you $1 million, gave you a nice home, big houses, everybody in America and around the world would be Christian. It's a tough life. It's a hardship. The call to the cross is hard. And Jesus told us, you remember the series I preached back in September, pick up your cross and follow me. Part of it's following him. And it's tough. But I can tell you that any trial you're in right now is temporary. God will sustain you in the midst of that storm. If you just trust him, you won't be blown by the wind. And you'll have that calm assurance.